Everyone, and welcome back to Rewatchable, Hypable's podcast, where we watch television shows and talk about them. My name is Michal. I'll be your host for today. Today, I'm also joined by Donya, Karen, and Ariana. If you would like to contact us at Rewatchable, you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can reach out to us on Twitter, which is @re_watchable. You can leave comments on this post on Hypable, and you can also get in touch with us on the wilds of Tumblr. We're also doing a new thing now, which is fun facts. I think they're supposed to be about us. Is that correct, Ariana?
Or if you have a water bottle on your desk, like whatever.
I do have a water bottle on my desk, but I feel like that would be a cop-out as my fun fact. So my fun fact is that I might be painting my nails while we do this episode.
Ooh, multitasker.
Yeah. What about you?
Me? I have the best fun fact, so I'm saving it
for
last.
Oh, yeah, actually, you're right. We should do that last. We got a sneak peek of Ariana's fun fact. Donya, what about you?
I guess the only thing that's initially coming to mind was that when I was a little bit younger, I used to be on the national squad for judo, and I once won a silver medal.
Oh, my gosh, Donya, cool. That's awesome. Wow, I'm taking you everywhere with me now.
I've actually got somewhere, I'll find it for you, but I've got a picture of, like, little baby Donya with pigtails in my gi and with all of my trophies literally around me.
You
looking
would have been
completely
great for, like,
adorable, but don't mess with me.
Like, you could have been in, like, Azula's crew. Like,
I probably could have. At one point, I was very good. Like, at one point, we would considering training me for the Olympics, but then I had to decide between further education and taking judo further, and I chose further education. So, yeah.
Bad choice, Danya.
I know. I should have gone to the Olympics. It's stupid. I should have done that. I was an idiot. I regret it, but hey, look where I am now.
Yeah. Such illustrious company. Speaking of which, Karen, what's your fun
fact? Oh, that was such a nice segue. Thank you. My fun fact is I just moved to North Carolina, and it's hot as hell down here.
That's because it is hell.
Yes. I mean, I like it. And if you've listened to previous Rewatchables, Kristen, who has been on here, is now my roommate.
Aww.
Yay, Kristen.
Oh my gosh, now I can tell you to do things like give Kristen a hug for me, and you can.
I can. I will do that right after this podcast.
Oh.
And Ariana, why don't you tell us your fun fact to end all fun facts?
Oh my gosh, guys. So, most exciting moment of my life happened this weekend. So, I'm crewing a show, like, backstage. I'm a stagehand for this show that some LMU graduates have been putting on for the past 10 years where it's called Snapshots, and all the proceeds go to fighting breast cancer. Yay. So like celebrities, they volunteer their time and like are a part of it. And so backstage, the stagehands on Saturday, we were talking about how some of them are like our favorites, and we were like, oh my gosh, Mindy is so great. She's so nice, and she like brings us bread, and she, we like love her. And so I'm folding the programs because that's one of my jobs, and I'm like, let's see what she's been in. And I start reading it, and my heart like falls like to the pit of my stomach. I like nearly fell out of my chair. I could not believe it. She is the voice of Lin Beifong, and I was like, like hyperventilating. Everyone thought I was insane, but I like could not believe it. So right after that, I went up to her and I was like, hi, I don't want to be creepy, but like Lin Beifong's my bae. Like, I'm on a podcast where we just like gush about her all the time, and because she's so great, she was just like, oh my gosh, yay, I love her, let's take a picture. And so yeah, she's great. So I accidentally befriended Lin, which was so cool. I'm so glad I didn't know it was her, before I talked to her. Otherwise, there's no way I could have, like, gone up to her. I would have been too, like, intimidated, but.
I'm so glad you did, because I feel like sometimes people don't do that, and especially for voice actors, it's like, as long as you're, like, normal and enthusiastic, like, I feel like there's no, you know, like, don't go to them when they're at dinner, but, like, yeah, in general, you know. Be like, I love
you.
Hey,
that's a great looking salad. By the way, I love you.
Yeah. I have food envy, which is the main reason I came over to this table, but, like, you know. Anyway, so let's get into episode 5 or chapter 5 of season 2 of Korra. I can sense we're hitting the controversy. I'm like getting flashbacks from like 2 years ago, all this stuff. But this is my first time reading an Ariana synopsis for Korra. So yeah, this is exciting. In this chapter, everyone is useless and making movies or starting wars, but at least Mako finally fucking breaks up with Korra, so we don't have to deal with that train wreck anymore. And Baylin is back too. Also, Milo trains lemurs. There we go. So I think, yeah, everybody wants to talk about the first discussion point, which is that Lin is back. Ariana in the doc wrote that she's still perfect. I think that that's debatable. But she is pretty great. So what do you guys think of Lin Beifong coming back? Karen, how about you?
Without her.
Or Donya, why don't you go first?
No, I was just saying it's been too long since she was on there. I forgot how long it was, how long the gap was from when we see her episode to episode. And it was like, I was just like sitting there going, where's Lin?
I know, she was a major character last season. And then she just like wasn't in it at all this season so far. I meant, like, she's perfect and, like, her introduction back was so perfect because I was, like, so frustrated with Korra and she just, like, let her have it right away. So that made me happy.
That was pretty great. I think, you know, a lot of this season is interesting and then it kind of really does deal with some hardcore political issues. But at the same time, it's, like, Korra at her, like, least equipped to deal with them when she has to be at her best. And, you know, so one of the things that kind of comes up is that, like, how can, you know, her main plot in this episode, or part of it anyway, is that she really is trying to get President Ryko to get involved in the war. And, you know, it's a good question. Like, does she have that right? Is it her place to start wars? What did you think, Karen?
I was really excited that she was back, that Lin was back and everything, but with Korra, I don't know, it's getting very frustrating, just the whole situation in general, because I feel like nothing's happening, that it's a lot of back and forth, a lot of just fighting, and this is going to sound really dumb, but everyone's acting like children. I realize that they're children, but when you have the weight of the world on your shoulders, it's kind of time to grow up. And nobody's really doing that. And I think that's why right now I'm just kind of like, ugh, kind of over the whole, like, love triangle thing and all this fighting when they have much bigger issues to be focusing on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, I mean, Part of me, like, I get the frustration with Korra. It's not something that I personally feel as intently because I've always, I don't know, I kind of, for whatever reason, empathize with her, like, terror, basically, for the entire way of life in the Southern Water Tribe. And I think that she's, you know, she does what Korra does, which is when she feels remotely out of control, she tries to get control back, and usually in stupid ways, because she's, you know, again, like a teenager. But, I mean, Ariana, what do you think? Do you think that, like, you know, she has a conversation with Ryko that is kind of frustrating, and I think for everyone, but who did you come out rooting for in that discussion?
Are you talking about the president?
Yeah.
I weirdly found myself, like, sort of on the president's side, which is bizarre because I definitely came in here and I was like, oh, the president's the big bad this season. But I can definitely see his point. Well, first of all, I don't think that they have any business like having a president. I think that they should have kept the council. But
really?
I do, because for a place that's so mixed like that, I think it was good to have a representative from each tribe. And then they're more like, it's more like, you know, they're making joint decisions and people there would be like a water tribe person there who could argue their side or whatever. But
should they be benders? I'm just curious, because like that was...
Oh, did they have to be benders? Was that like a requirement?
Well, they kind of wound up as the most powerful people, if you know what I mean.
Oh, I didn't realize that they had to be benders. That's
they
not
don't
cool.
have to be, but that was kind of like what was coming out, like the way it kind of wound up.
Oh, well, I think it should be like anybody. So I like the council, but like, I don't think the benders should have all the power. I'm just,
channeling them on right now. So
in this case, I mean, it makes me really uncomfortable that Korra, who has so much power as one person, she has the power to sway an entire war. And I don't think she should really be getting in the middle of something like this that isn't so, like with Aang, I mean, obviously it was like a dictatorship and the Fire Nation was like suppressing everyone. So in that, he is supposed to fight for peace. But in this case, it's more a little bit, you know, it's not so clear cut black and white. So I think that she should be going at least for trying to have some kind of amicable peace thing going on, because it's just starting the war. It's not like she's the one starting it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. She's trying. Anyway, she's doing her best. Donya, what do you think about it? Like, watching it over again, what are your impressions?
I mean, This season for me was always a difficult one to watch anyway. Like, it kind of never, like, completely found its footing for me. So I wasn't necessarily on anyone's side. I mean, obviously at this point of the show, especially rewatching it, I know what direction it's going to go in. So it's really, really difficult to kind of choose a side and be impartial to it. But again, I don't think that the president was necessarily wrong in kind of not wanting to jump straight into a war. I mean, a war against anyone. And I mean, they know the history of the Hundred Year War is like, it's not that old by that point. It's still, there's still people who lived through it living in that time. So it's very, very difficult for them to be able to put that to one side and jump straight into a war again. So I don't necessarily think the president was wrong in erring on the side of caution before wanting to jump straight into another war. I mean, it's so soon after the one with the Fire Nation, and they've taken so long to kind of get to a place of peace. Like, that's to kind of jump straight back into one so soon. I mean, I don't blame him.
Yeah, and I mean, if you think about it, this is kind of, you know, Raiko has the potential to set a precedent here, in terms of, you know, obviously all previous wars were fought when, you know, in the paradigm where there were just four nations and everybody was aligned to that nation. And now you have this kind of extra entity of Republic City, and it's, you know, kind of the potential like balance tipper in that way. And that's, you know, that's what Korra is trying to use them as. Again, I understand why she wants to do it, but it isn't, you know, it's certainly not black and white or clear cut in any sense. But Korra's frustration did definitely like have one upside, which is that we got to see, you know, we got to see Iroh again. So that was nice. Karen, how did you feel about seeing Iroh again? Did you think that he should have been like, yeah, sure, I'll totally like do potentially illegal reconnaissance for you, and then, you know, shutting that down when he got found out? How did you feel about that?
It is always nice seeing him, although still his voice just sends me for a loop. It's really hard not to picture Zuko when he's talking, but it was nice. It's always nice to hear that voice again. In terms of whether or not he should have done something, I mean, like he said, his family has a long history of being very close with the Avatar, and I think that he was, you know, honoring that. And being the Avatar, you want to trust that they're going to make the right decision, but I think some people forget that she's still such a kid, and even though she's at her full potential now, she can go into the Avatar state and all of that, it's like she's still, I don't feel like she's still balanced, like she still has a lot of work to do in being more spiritual and zen. She tends to jump into those fights, and she's a hothead, and I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing all the time, because it makes her a stronger, more passionate fighter, but I worry that she's just, you know, jumping in there too quickly when she should be sitting back and being, okay, what's the best thing for everybody? Because that's basically what the Avatar's job is to keep the balance. And I'm not entirely sure she's doing that.
That's definitely a good point. Anyone else, any thoughts on Korra's attempts to get War Made, or shall we move on? Okay, we'll move on.
I was going to say, there's a really good point in here, though, about... obviously, Iroh isn't the only part of that scene. It's when the president kind of says and puts an end to it, he kind of goes, oh, well, you know, my father and my mother have always been very, very close. And I mean, there's a really good point that I don't, was it Ariana's point that, do you think Zuko would help Korra start a non-sanctioned war?
Mm.
Honestly, I couldn't see him doing that. That's why I was so surprised Iroh was like, oh, yeah, he'll help you. Like, I get Iroh doing it because he's, like, a young, you know, like, ship captain, you know. But, like, I can't really see old Zuko being like, this is a good idea.
Have you guys? Zuko's been through so much. Like, he knows the sacrifices of war. Mm-hmm. And I feel like he would definitely, not that he would say no flat out, but I think he would take some time to figure out, okay, is this the only way that we're going to be able to do this?
Yeah, have you guys read the comics yet?
No.
No.
Oh, damn it, that's such a good point to bring up for this based off one of the
comics. I mean, I feel like I do know, like, basically what they're about. So if you want to bring up a point, I think that's fine.
Well... I mean, Michal, you read the comics, right?
Yeah. Are you thinking of the end of the first one? The end.
Yeah,
of the...
pretty much.
Yeah.
And essentially, they kind of almost start slipping back into a place where they get dangerously close to starting another war. I mean, I think that having slipped into a place like that in the comics again, and seeing how easy it is to kind of let your emotions kind of rule yourself, I think he would absolutely not want to basically sway it one way or the other. Do you agree, Michal?
I do, yeah. And I also think that, you know, everyone else is seeing this a little bit more clearly than Korra is. I don't think that Korra, you know, obviously she knows that I guess, you know, bringing Republic City in and escalating the conflict would be escalating the conflict. But I don't think, you know, everybody else is looking at that and being like, okay, well, that's a hardcore war. Like, that is, you know, not the Hundred Years War, but it's similar, you know, whatever. Korra's like, what are you talking about? I'm just trying to get the Northern Water Tribe out and save my family, you know? So I think that that's part of the reason why she gets so frustrated and why everyone else is like, are you crazy? We're not going to do that. You know, I do remember being like very, like, however we think Zuko would have reacted. I was like, oh my God, we're going to see Zuko. That's so awesome.
He's not dead. Yeah. That means he's not dead, guys. Yeah.
Is that the first time you learned that? Is that?
Yeah, that's the first like official. I mean, I feel like unless they say that they're dead, it means they're alive. So the only one I'm like, Sokka's definitely dead. But I'm like, everyone else has to be out there.
Hashtag not first... dead Zuko.
Yeah, so this is like the first confirmation that he's alive.
So Yeah, so I was really excited, and I was like, okay, we're going to go to see Zuko, that's so awesome, and blah, 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 and then it's like, no.
Yeah. Never mind.
Yeah. No Zuko for you.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, so obviously it's a complicated situation, and one of the things that makes it more complicated is that, you know, we have this event where Korra marches in the peace rally or the war rally or whatever it is, which I did think was a beautiful scene, like the way it was animated, and being like all kind of moody and silent and tensions and et cetera. And then, you know, we have this bomb planted in the Southern Water Tribe Cultural Center, and Mako is like playing actual detective. And he's the only one who seems to get what's actually going on, which is difficult. And that obviously leads to a lot of tensions with Korra, because he, you know, everyone wants to blame the Northern Water Tribe, and he's like, I'm not so sure about that. So yeah, how do we feel about Zuko being the voice of truth? Karen, how did you feel about that?
Mako?
Yeah.
Okay, I was like, wait, what? Mako being the voice of truth, I liked it. I mean, I'm not his biggest fan, but I think he was being very level-headed and smart in this episode. And then Korra just came in and was super emotional about everything. And I think that's her worst trait, is that, you know, she just feels like people are betraying her left and right, which is fair considering that, you know, all the things that have happened to her so far. But if you're going to be the Avatar, then I think you have to learn to step back and do what Mako's doing, which is looking at all possibilities. So it was kind of strange, because I did feel more connected with Mako in this episode than Korra, which I wasn't really expecting. But, you know, it is what it is.
Mm-hmm. And Ariana, how about you?
I mean, I was totally Team Mako in this episode, which is weird, because usually I'm like the first to hate on Mako. But I mean, also, he was the only one, like, everyone else was like, yeah, let's go to war. Great idea. Like, all of Korra's other friends. I just feel like they are not fully thinking this through. And Mako's like, actually, like, let's stop. Think about this. And she's like, no, you're betraying me. And he's like, no, I just want you to calm down for a minute.
Yeah. So. And of course, you know, this leads to a very public and very messy breakup of Mikora. And it feels like just yesterday that they were reuniting and, you know, I love you, Mako. I love you, Korra. How things have changed. So, yeah. Donya, how do you feel about the breakup of Mako and Korra?
Hallelujah. I never liked them together anyway. I wasn't necessarily a big fan of Asami and Mako when they got together anyway in the first season. Like, I'm not here all of the time for all of the romance, but particularly these two together, I never really got the sense that they were good for each other. I sometimes feel like they don't bring out the best in each other. There's too much push on each side and not enough give. So yeah, I remember being glad the first time around as well, is like I didn't particularly see it as a healthy relationship for either of them. So yeah. Yay, basically.
And Ariana, how about you?
Oh my god. So exciting. I was going through this whole episode like, this is terrible. Like, I hate like this show right now. I'm not enjoying it. But then they broke up and I was like, okay, thank you, bright light somewhere. And of course it led to like the best line ever, which we can talk about later.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Karen, what about you?
Definitely excited about it. I think that they were really bad for each other. I never felt a connection between them to begin with. It wasn't, you know, it was sort of superficial at the start. And even Mako was like not really into her at the very beginning, or didn't necessarily notice her in the same way that she noticed him. And so I never got why they were together to begin with. And they just fight all the time. And it's not a healthy relationship. So you know, maybe they can be friends, but it's just, it's probably going to take a while because that was a very public breakup. And I was like, you're really going to do this right now, right here in the middle of like the station? And I was so embarrassed for Mako in particular.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where I think, you know, season two is very much, I mean, it's about those relationships, you know, it is, it's about kind of what happens after, I think, like the ultimate victory, right? Which is what season one feels like. And it's kind of demonstrating repeatedly and very powerfully that just because I think you're physically capable of, you know, achieving certain things doesn't mean you're mentally capable of it or emotionally prepared for it. And that could be, that's both on, you know, like a mundane level where like people have relationships that they, you know, think are going to be great and aren't prepared to get into. And also, you know, on a political level, when you have a teenager with like major political power, sort of. So yeah, that was definitely a big moment. Other than that, you know, we also have this plot line with Bolin, who is kind of roped by Varric into becoming a mover star. And I'm not going to lie, this is actually like more than the relationships, more than anything, probably my least favorite plot line possibly in the whole show. And, you know, I think these episodes kind of show a lot of that because it's kind of like you lose like the very sweet Bolin and not in a, like, you know, I could see him getting carried away and whatever, but he, like, his behavior with Ginger, and it's just, it's very, very icky to me. So, Ariana, how do you feel about that? The way you put it was, are we supposed to be getting something out of this Bolin is a famous movie star plotline?
It's just, like, so frustrating for me because I feel like, what's Bolin's point? Like, he's so not contributing anything valuable to the team right now, like, to Team Avatar. He's not doing anything. And I feel like he was meant to be the Sokka, like, the jokey one. But, like, Sokka was useful and, like, Bolin is not useful. Like, I don't know. He can't even do his own stunts in the movies. Like, he has to have those ropes and things. And I was thinking, I was like, Mei and Ty Lee don't even have, like, powers, and they can do stunts. So I'm like, over Bolin right now, and it's frustrating.
Yeah, especially because, you know, he was so lovable in season one. Like, at least for me, I really liked him as this, like, sweet guy. And then it's suddenly like, well, who are you? Like, what's going on? Karen, how do you feel about it?
Yeah, I'm kind of apathetic toward the whole thing just because I'm not entirely sure what the point is. I mean, I can kind of see some parallels between, like, they've had a lot of lines in there about fame and what that whole situation can be like, and I kind of can see how that could relate to Korra, although they're not really bringing that up too much this season like they did last season. And I kind of like the idea of Bolin striking out on his own and not necessarily being tied to his brother and being in his shadow, kind of being his own person. But I wish he was doing something more constructive rather than being a movie star. I mean, he's a bender. He's really good at what he does. And he's been with Korra and Mako in the past fighting and everything, and I just wish that he could use his talents for something like that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think there are, you know, there are, like, sparks in there that are enjoyable, like seeing Pabu and Naga, like, acting and having those voice actors and stuff.
Except they make them sound so dumb. That made me so bad.
Yeah, it's kind of like we're not even supposed to take this seriously on that level, you know? Like, they're kind of... Because if they wanted them to sound cute and normal, like, they would have, you know, made them sound cute and normal. But I think it is also sort of based on, like, one of... Like, a very early film called, like, Nanook of the North or something, which was... kind of a similar propaganda type film. So it's interesting in that way, but as far as character goes, I don't see it working.
Donya. I'm gonna play devil's advocate. I like it. Not necessarily in a way that I like it as in I like who Bolin becomes through this storyline. However, I think it's really horribly tragic. The way that, you know, at the start of this episode, when they're kind of all going off to do their own thing, and Bolin's like, oh, well, what am I supposed to do? And Marco's like, I don't know, figure it out yourself, Bolin. And he gets swept up into it because he's at a loose end. He's lost. He doesn't know necessarily where he fits, what he's doing. And Varric, in the way that Varric does, capitalizes on that and kind of sees an opportunity and almost manipulates him into it. And for him, he sees himself as, I guess, this being a way that he can express himself. Maybe it's not necessarily in the right way. Maybe it doesn't do great things for his character, but it was really, really interesting to see it in the respect of, obviously, a lot of like British culture, stuff like propaganda films and this sort of stuff is huge over here. Still, we've still got whole museums dedicated to like World War II memorabilia, and there's a huge walk-in like World War II museum where you can still go and you can sit and watch loads of these propaganda films, and it's fascinating sometimes to see the parallel between the ones that we're seeing playing out on Korra through the Bolin movie star plotline and the stuff that I've studied when I've been looking at World War II propaganda. So it's, for me, I find it very, very fascinating the way that they kind of bring up stuff and talk about even really, really candidly what fame can do to people, like, and what that kind of scene was like. I thought it was I think it's just really, really interesting if you look at it from almost a meta standpoint, rather than taking it at face value in the show.
No, I think that it is. That's why I said, are we supposed to be getting something out of this? Because I think that there is like supposed to be like a deeper meaning, like you said, Donya. And I think that you're really getting to like the core of this plot line. I guess like what frustrates me is, because we saw this even in the beginning, like Bolin, he's the one who's still like trying to keep the fire ferrets going or whatever at the beginning. But I don't understand why he feels so useless. Do you know what I mean? Because he isn't. He has a lot of power. He's a earthbender. And so why doesn't he feel like he fits in to Team Avatar, that he can contribute something?
I mean, we obviously, stepping outside of it, we see his worth, but I mean, it's even like through season one, you kind of see him a lot more on the outskirts rather than getting really, really into the action. And I think the brush off at the start of this episode, and that kind of, if you think, that's probably not the first time, it's the first few times that we've probably seen it, but you think about like in the background, how often has that happened, like off screen, to push him to be at this point? So
see, I actually disagree with that. I think it's slightly more of Bolin finding himself in an unfamiliar position, you know, that being like, you know, kind of Mako being like, a big theme in season one was kind of how protective Mako was of Bolin, and kind of, you know, there was a very cute motion comic that was released between season one and season two about how they got Pabu. And I remember looking back on that during season two and being like, that story was better than what we're getting right now. You guys should check it out. It's really good. I don't remember what it's called, but like Republic City Hustle or something. And you know, so I feel like this is the first time that Bolin might be like, okay, I want to accomplish something, but I don't know what, and I don't know how, and I have no, like, not support, because Mako's supportive, but he's also, like, so wrapped up in his own stuff that he kind of has no idea how Bolin is actually feeling. So for me, it was more like, yes, he does feel useless, but it's kind of, like, from the opposite perspective of, like, for the first time, I'm actually trying to figure out what my place is and failing spectacularly.
Yeah, I agree. I can see it from that way as well. I mean, it works. It kind of can work either way. I mean, but the whole thing is that this comes from a place of Bolin not really knowing where he fits in right now. And that's why I think just how this plotline shapes him through season two is why it's so really horribly tragic. But I do, like, I found it one of the things through the series where I was like, oh, Bolin, no, what's going on? Someone just, like, notice for 2 minutes what's going on with him and give him the kind of shake at the shoulders that he needs to break out of it.
But everyone else is dealing with a war.
Exactly. So it's kind of one of those things where it's like he's left to keep spiraling, and it gets, you know, it just gets worse and worse and worse, so...
Yeah, I mean, I totally hear that. Part of me is also like, Bolin, you're not a moron. Like, you know, like, I love his innocence, and I love a lot of things about him. I just feel like this particular plotline brings out just not, like, the good parts.
I keep comparing him to Asami and, like, this girl who's lost, like, literally everything, and just watching her, like, hustle to, like, try and keep her life together. And versus him, who's just like, eh.
Yeah. Well, most people look terrible when compared to Asami, so, you know. Anyway, Karen, any thoughts on Bolin and his stuff?
Yeah, I mean, basically the same thing. I'm just a little frustrated with him right now, especially when Mako goes to him for help and Bolin just kind of shrugs him off, you know? I think what you said was actually super accurate. You know, he's not a moron, and he probably does feel very upset with his brother right now, and he doesn't really... You know when you fight with somebody and you kind of just, like, ignore them because you know it's going to make them angry? There's a time and a place to do that. I feel like this was not that. He's not stupid. He should know what's on the line, and he should just... get over it and do what needs to be done to help them figure out what's going on exactly. And the fact that he didn't do that, whereas before I feel like he was so optimistic and so ready and willing to help, makes me feel like, you know, this character has changed so much. And I get changing characters, and I get kind of being in flux and needing characters to have their faults, but this just does not feel like Bolin, and I'm really sad about it.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, you know, like I said before, just my least favorite thing is the whole, like, oh, Ginger, you know, obviously we're meant to be together, and it's like, no, respect her agency, you asshole! Like, stop it! You know? Anyway, moving on, we also have a tiny little plot line where, because I guess they were like, well, we paid J.K. Simmons for this many episodes, so we have to have him in this one, too. Tenzin teaches Milo how to, train his lemur pets, and it's sort of cute, but it's not really anything. Any thoughts on that?
I liked the comparison to this and, like, the way he tries to teach Korra, because I feel like he's like, no, you have to do it this way, and, like, keep your distance, or what does he say at some point? At some point he's like, yeah, he's telling him that he has to be more of a teacher and,
like, the alpha lemur, and
yeah. And I thought that was really interesting for the way he sees his relationship with Korra, because that's kind of like what started the problems, versus Milo, who's like, let's all love each other. And I mean, I feel like Korra does need more strict guidance, but the comparison was interesting.
Yeah, for sure. Anyone else? Any thoughts on the lemurs, Pokey?
I mean, that's my scene, so...
Well, speaking of scenes, I mean, I do want to ask you guys, how did you feel at the end of this episode where it was like, okay, Cora's going to see, you know, Zuko and we're going to meet the Fire Lady. It's so awesome. Oh no, she gets swallowed by
Spirit. I know. I thought about putting something in there, but like then we find out right away that no, that's not happening.
So, yeah, this episode definitely worked a little bit better when you had a week to be like, what just happened to Cora? You know.
Yeah.
But at the end of the episode, were you guys like surprised? What did you think was going to happen?
I mean, I thought she was going to go see Zuko and he was going to like shut her down.
Okay, yeah, no, it's true. That's basically, those are your options pretty much. Anyway, so yeah, let's go to favorite scenes. Karen, what was your favorite scene?
Mine was when Varric eats the hot pepper to increase circulation and brain power, because I just relate to that so much. I love spicy things, so maybe I should do this more often.
Same.
But only if you also hang upside down and, you know.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah. Ariana, how about you?
Mine was when...
This is going to surprise everyone.
Yes, mine was when Lynn came back because it's been too long.
And Donya, how about you?
Mine was just when Milo gets his lemur army and you see them all like kind of, he like blows his whistle and they all like kind of come up like this huge swarm of them, and Tenzin's just there like, I've created a monster.
I love the look on Milo's face. He's like this little tiny dictator over these lemurs.
Yeah, spoiler alert, that continues.
Oh, that's great. That would be terrifying.
Yeah. And my favorite scene was, it's weird, but I like have this weird liking of Desna. So like when he
but not the girl, just Desna.
Yeah, because she's like a caricature, and he's just like, I kind of like him when, you know, they're talking to Unalaq and he's just like, wait, what are we doing? Like, okay, are you sure, Dad? Like, really? And I've had that conversation, so, you know, I felt for him. Favorite lines. Karen, what was yours?
Mine was when Cora and Mako were arguing, and Cora says, I can't talk to you when you're like this. And Mako goes, you're the one who's like this, because that's so accurate. Like, she's blaming him for being ridiculous. She's the one being more ridiculous.
Oh my gosh, can I add one? Because I also loved this one, where she's like, I'm just trying to save the world. And he's like, well, you wouldn't have to if you didn't keep messing it up.
That was kind of a low blow, but not entirely inaccurate either.
There was a lot of shade thrown in this episode.
Yeah.
Ariana, what was your other one?
Mine was when Lynn comes out and then, you know, Mako's like, I broke up with the Avatar because it's such a mess. And she's like, you got off easy. You should have seen Air Temple Island after Tenzin broke up with me. And her little smirk. And...
Okay, the funny thing about that line, by the way, is that when this originally aired, they got so much blowback for that line because they were like, what are you portraying? Lynn is this like irrational woman who can't handle it when she's being broken up with and blah, blah, blah. And I remember that conversation.
Really? That's so funny. I saw it as like Lynn being a badass and like,
I think that was how it was
like intended. Going all Carrie Underwood on him, like with her.
You're leaving me for that?
Yes! Well, obviously, I'm so anti-Pema right now. I mean, I would totally be on Lynn's squad. Like, let's go. Like, I'm ready, girl.
Tony, how about you?
Mine is also from this scene, but it's when Lynn initially comes out of the door and then just goes, what the flameo happened here?
Oh my gosh, did you guys see the beautiful gif that I found on the internet?
Yes.
It's my favorite thing. We tweeted it out. Oh no, I tweeted it to Brittany. I'll have her retweet it.
Yeah, I didn't see that. I need to see what this is. And mine, shocking, is also a Lynn quote, which is, you know, it's like the first line of the episode or something. She gets to Republic City and she's like, welcome home, Avatar. Thanks for starting a war. And it's just like, this is how it's going to go. This episode is, yeah, shade everywhere. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that concludes our discussion of Chapter 5. Let's talk about Chapter 6, The Sting. And this is a very weird episode. Basically, in this episode, Korra wakes up and has spoiler alert, that's the end of the episode. Korra wakes up and has amnesia, but in the meantime, Bolin is still in the movies and Asami is too fierce for this world, which is why dumb boys can't deal with her perfection. Very true. Also, Mako thinks he's Batman and quote-unquote discovers that Varric might be evil. Yeah, so this episode has a lot of, what was that ship called? Masami in it, I guess you could say. We basically spend most of the episode with Mako and Asami, who are hanging out because Asami discovers that her mecha tanks have been mysteriously stolen. So Ariana, as one of our top Asami fans, I mean, we all are, but, you know, I'll just go to you. What did you think of, I guess, the general Asami-ness of this episode?
I mean, this episode was honestly, like, so boring for me. It was super boring. It was also, like, weird. Like, I didn't even know what kind of points to make. Like, it was weird when Asami, like, kissed Mako. It made me super uncomfortable.
Same.
But, yeah, I was like, I thought we were over this. But also, Asami, like, you can do, like, a lot better. So I don't know. It was a weird episode. And also I was like, wait, is Korra not in this episode? But then, you know, she was at the end.
Yeah, I kind of liked that she wasn't in the episode. I thought that was really different.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, like I said, like coming at this like live, I don't think this is when they were showing two episodes at once. No, that was season 3. The airing of the show has been just a mess. Clusterfuck, guys, basically. But yeah, so it was a little more powerful when you kind of had to wait a week and it was like, okay, what's going on? Oh, okay, we've got, you know, Mako and Asami doing stuff, and then it's like, but Korra, and then like, oh, she has amnesia. But yeah, let's just talk about the kiss, because, you know, whatever, it happened. Tonya, I mean, I remember being just like, why happening? Like, why? You know. And I think that might be how Karen and Ariana feel. But how did you feel?
Oh, same. I was just like, really, we're backsliding into this? Do we have to? Do we have to go back to this stupid, god-awful love triangle of awkwardness and stupidness again? And I was just like, I don't need it. I don't want to deal with it. I'm over it already. I thought with the Mako breakup that I was like, okay, we're done with them trying to throw women at Mako. Like, I thought, okay, cool, we're over it now. Great. Let's just move on and focus on all of these characters individually. But then, no, we're backsliding right back into Mako and Asami being together. But, like, I don't necessarily blame Asami. The way
she's
that I look
with
at
a lot of stress right now.
Yeah, and you know the way that they left off in season 1 wasn't necessarily that there weren't feelings there. She was just mad at him for not being honest with her, and so, you know, backsliding into that where potentially those feelings hadn't completely gone isn't necessarily out of the norm for her. Whereas I think for Mako, it's like, whoa, way too soon to be jumping back into something, especially considering it was in the previous episode that he broke up with Korra.
Well, also, yeah. Though, the only reason that he broke up with Asami was because he got with Korra.
Mm-hmm.
And he, like, as soon as he broke up with Asami, he, like, jumped into Korra's arms. So
yeah,
it could make sense in her super heightened brain right now to think, oh, now he's broken up with Korra, he's back to me.
I mean, I do think there are a lot of, like, I mean, to be fair, I mean, this doesn't, things change, but at this point, you know, Mako didn't kiss Asami, like, she kissed him, and he was kind of like, oh, okay, you know. So I don't necessarily, like, despise Mako for this scene. I just remember being, and you guys are absolutely right, like, Asami has been through a lot, and, like, this kiss happens, I'm blanking, but right, it happens, like, right when she's like, okay, all of my stuff was stolen, everything is terrible, like, this is the worst. Right? That's when it happens.
Yeah.
So
he's like, I don't have anything left.
Right. So it does make sense. It's just kind of like, it would also have made sense to not happen and like would have preferred that version of the story. Yeah. Especially because it did feel like, okay, well, we're getting past the romantic stuff and mm-hmm. no, we weren't.
Yeah, it felt like Asami regressing, which is, I mean, also makes sense, but it's not what we want to see.
Yeah. Basically, season two is like everyone acts very childish, pretty much. But did you guys like watching them kind of do the sting together? Because, like, I enjoyed that. I was like, yeah, hey, hang out. You guys can be friends. That's cool, you know? I'm apparently very naive about all this, you know. But how did you feel about that, Ariana?
I kind of had a feeling that they were gonna, because since he just broke up with Korra in the last episode, I kind of had a feeling that they were gonna try and do something romantic-y here. So I didn't really enjoy it as much. But I didn't expect her to kiss him so soon, which is what made me uncomfortable. But. Mm-hmm.
Karen, how about you?
Yeah, basically just echoing everything that you guys have been saying, because I don't hate Mako in this scene because he didn't really do anything, and I actually kind of appreciated that he was so surprised and kind of was like, well, I gotta go now, because you could clearly see that he was really confused and pulled in two different directions. But I did like them working together because I like the idea that they can be friends, that, you know, they are a team and that they're gonna need to work together and they can be mature adults about it, because most of the other characters aren't being that way. So I guess it was kind of refreshing.
Mm-hmm. And Donya, how do you feel about, like, the rest of this episode?
You know, I didn't dislike it. You know, right up until the kiss, I was kind of getting into the swing of being like, oh, hey, they actually have, like, I forgot that their dynamic is actually pretty good. It's pretty interesting. I kind of like how they are as friends. And then the kiss kind of ruined it for me. I was like, they're going, no, we don't need to make anything more out of it. It was fine the way that it was. Like, they worked, they gelled really, really well together as a team. So.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, that's, yeah, basically. So another, you know, another theme that's going on in this episode is kind of Varric's role in all of this. And Mako kind of comes to realize that, because it's like, who stole Asami's mecha tanks? It's like a whole thing, and they go on a chase and, you know, whatever. But it's, there's a really interesting scene at the end where, you know, Mako is talking. He basically sees the detonator that he's been like, hey, everybody, this detonator is really important. Everybody's like, what? The detonator is not important. That certainly didn't cause the explosion. It's the Northern Water Tribe with their brain magic. And so, you know, he realizes that Varric has actually manufactured this, and he goes to see Varric, and they kind of exchange like a very interesting, like, I know what you did last summer kind of look. but yeah, Donya, how did you feel about this, you know, the mystery solving Mako and the kind of revelation that Varric is, you know, no good as,
or well, I mean, yeah, when I was originally watching it, like, I kind of, when they started doing the kind of, movers and stuff, and when they started doing like the, oh, explosions thing, I was like, something's not quite right there. And I remember being like, maybe Mako is onto something, like, and kind of like, he's being the voice of reason, and I'm not sure how I feel about this. And Yeah, I remember being like, oh, okay, so this is the direction they're going in. So yeah, it was really, really interesting for me that it was like, I kind of had this really uneasy feeling, because I was like, as a person who's gotten so far in industry, like, there had to be something, there potentially had to be something else going on. Everything seemed a little bit too convenient for his outward personality. So I was like, oh, okay, this is kind of interesting for me that this is the direction that they're actually taking it in. So
mm-hmm. How about you, Karen?
I was actually really surprised by this. I didn't know until the last second that he was behind it, and I feel a little betrayed, not gonna lie, because I kind of like the dude. He's crazy, but I feel like he's, at least up until this point, was the right kind of crazy, where he was just really off the wall, but it was something that allowed him to get ahead in the business. And yeah, I knew that he was manipulative from the beginning, but I don't think that necessarily makes you a bad person. I think that makes you a good, you have a good business mind if you can do that, as long as you're not like ruining people's lives. I mean, this is just sort of his shtick. This is his personality. And I don't know if he's evil. I know that's the question in the doc, and I know that he stole, you know, all the mecha tanks and did all of this stuff, but I don't know if he's just being like, oh, this is a good idea, this will allow me to get more things, and I can actually kind of help these people out. You know, in his mind, he's like helping them, but knowing that they would maybe never agree to it otherwise. Maybe I'm just making excuses. I don't know.
No, I agree. I think this is a red herring. Now, I don't understand all the stuff about the mecha tanks or whatever, because honestly, I was like half tuned out while watching this. I was like, this is so boring. But I understand that he built, they think that he's like starting the war or whatever with his mechanics. But I feel like this is a red herring, because I just find it really weird that this guy that they've made so lovable, like, considering this is like a children's show, that's like a really dark turn. If this guy who was hiding in a bear suit is all of a sudden like the big bad that's gonna trying to kill everybody, like really malicious man. So
yeah, I think he's just misguided. Like, and I know that sounds like I'm making excuses for him, but I feel like he truly is just misguided. And maybe it has something to do with Donna.
Or maybe people stole his stuff.
All I'm thinking in my head is, Karen loves Tony Stark.
Okay, wait, but that's true, because I, for some reason, scrolled back in the docs and I saw that Natalie wrote that he was like Howard Stark, and now I can't get it out of my head that he's like Howard Stark. And granted, Howard Stark, like, at least movie Howard Stark, I don't know much about the comics, I know he was an ass there, but like, movie Howard Stark's not the best guy in the entire world, you know?
He's kind of terrible, actually.
He's kind of terrible, but not in like evil dictator
but
kind of
so
way.
But he's so funny.
Yeah, and it's like, I feel guilty for making excuses because his actions are not the greatest actions. Like, he could be a much better person than he is, but he's not evil. And so I feel like that's what Varric is. But yeah, I'm having Stark problems, so.
I mean, Varric is also not a great guy.
I'm in tune to Karen's Tony Stark feelings by this point. I was like, oh, she's getting Tony feelings about Varric. It's like, so, like...
I just don't think that Korra's the kind of show to, like, pull a beaver on us. You know what I mean, Karen? Like,
I was thinking about that, and I was like, dude, if I like this guy and he turns out to be evil, like, I don't know. I'll just quit rewatchable,
like,
because I don't think I can handle any more of this.
So I think that there's something else going on. Red herring. Also, Mako is like not super smart all the time, so that's fine.
I will say that there are different types of bad. You know, mm-hmm. there's evil bad, and then there's just kind of selfish bad, and you know, so
maybe he'll be redeemed, Karen, in the end.
That would be nice.
So Varric deserved better. Anyway, because I never stop thinking about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
we also, I mean, yeah, this episode is a little bit of sort of a bottle episode in this way. Like, we don't get a lot of other stuff going on. Desna and Eska report that Cora is dead, even though Tonrak? Unalaq. Unalaq, right. Unalaq is the uncle. I'm having K problems. Yes?
Yes.
Okay. Whatever. Their father was like, don't kill her. And they were like, I mean, she died. Like, we didn't kill her. She got told by a spirit. Anyway, that's going on. We have no air baby stuff. And yeah, Cora has amnesia. So what do you guys think? This is our big cliffhanger. Are you like, no, not amnesia? Or are you like,
oh no, I'm glad.
You're glad?
Well, everyone keeps saying it because obviously, well, I'm definitely like on Brittany's wavelength here because she's like, Cora's awful. And I'm like, I know. But everybody like on Twitter keeps saying, just keep like watching. She like needs to be awful now so she can have her arc or whatever. Who cares? So people are like, she gets better. So I'm hoping maybe this amnesia will make her stop being so awful now. Like, she'll regroup.
I feel like that's inherent though. Like, if you're awful, it kind of doesn't matter if you have amnesia. Like, you're still the same person.
She's not awful. She's trying to defend her family.
Yes. No, okay. I am not liking her right now. I think that she has a lot of potential. I get the idea that she needs her arc. And I love that. I love when characters can kind of start out awful and then grow as people, because that's what makes television so interesting. But I don't know if amnesia is going to, quote unquote, fix her. I hope that allows her maybe to get more in touch with her spiritual self, and that could open her eyes to a lot more things. And maybe whatever island she ended up on and the people that she meets will help her come to conclusions of, you
maybe
know,
she'll see the turtle, the giant lion turtle.
Maybe. I also wonder,
oh my God, I can't believe you said that.
If it's at all significant that the first thing she did was bend air, because obviously that's not her strong suit. But I didn't know if, like, if she can't remember who she is, does she all of a sudden think that she's an airbender? Is that the only thing she can remember how to do? Or, you know, if that's going to play any part into it.
Maybe she'll have to go relearn all of them again, because that's what I wanted to happen originally. No, well, but obviously, I think the lion, turtle, whatever is definitely going to happen, because that's what happened to Aang, right? He, like, washed up somewhere, and he met the lion, turtle. And I just remember taking the quiz last year when we were doing Avatar, and they were like, which lion, turtle are you? And there was, like, a bunch, and we were like, wait, what are these things? So that obviously means there's more in Korra. So,
well,
I'm saying now.
I just want to mention that the next two episodes are, like, a little special. They aren't your typical Cora episodes, basically.
Oh my gosh, are they the flashbacks that I've been wanting for forever? No.
To what?
what kind of
flashbacks?
Oh my gosh. I wasn't actually expecting there to be flashbacks. I don't care. I'll take any flashbacks, anything. I'll take grown-up Aang. I'll take Aang babies.
okay,
I'll take anything.
It might not be exactly what you're
expecting. Except Cora. I don't want Cora flashbacks. She's boring.
Let's just say that the next two episodes have a lot. I mean, I feel like I could tell you, because this was like in the like marketing for the show. So everybody, when we were watching the show, knew that this was coming. But I'm not going to
tell us. Just tell us. Oh, fine, then. I'll just Wikipedia it.
I'll just leave it as a mystery. I mean, everybody knows what I'm talking about, but whatever. Let's just say that it's a little different from the past. Actually, it's a lot different from the past several episodes. So that will bring us to the end of this particular episode. Let's talk about our favorite scenes. Karen, what was your favorite scene?
Mine was the Unalaq actor, because like his eyebrows were insane and his crazy eyes, and it just reminded me of like Power Rangers when they had that really over the top expression of evil, and it was beautiful.
Yes, that was that is definitely a benefit to the whole thing. Seeing the way they parody themselves, actually. Ariana, what was your favorite scene?
Mine was Asami when she was driving that boat. Oh my gosh, I love it. She is so great. And that was awesome.
Yeah, you stole mine. My favorite scene was kind of just, it's the same as my line. I just really like the two-toed pain guy. Like, and we'll go into that later. All right, Donya.
Mine was Nuk-Tuk, the hero of the South. Just the ridiculous propaganda. Like, I just, it's everything about the actual propaganda movies that I really, really like. Like, the actual filmed propaganda movies rather than what it turns Berlin into outside of that. Like, I just find them really fascinating.
Yeah, I totally hear that. And let's move to favorite lines. Karen, what was your favorite line?
Ow, my instrument, because Bolin, he's hilarious.
Yeah. And PJ Byrne does such a good job with Bolin. Like, even when I hate what he's saying, I'm like, I love your delivery, you're awesome. Ariana?
Mine was actually a Mako line, surprise. And he goes, Lu and Gong are idiots. I hate them and their stupid mustaches.
Lu and Gong are idiots, though. They really are.
I just love that he was like, I hate them and their stupid mustaches.
And Donya, how about you?
Mine was the line when Barrett goes, your girlfriend's about to die, and instead of untying her, you kiss her. Wait a minute, maybe that'll work. Yes, it's genius. Because all I could think was, like, every single show that's ever in this kind of dire kind of someone's about to die thing, and instead of doing something about it, they decide to kiss, and I was just like going, oh my god, way to just like throw shade at every other thing that there has ever been ever.
Yeah, and hence a million movie tropes were born, basically.
Yeah.
My favorite line was Two-Toed Ping explaining to Mako and Asami why he was called Two-Toed Ping. And he's like, that's why they call me Two-Toed Ping. And he's showing them his 12 toes. And Asami's like, because you have two extra toes. And Two-Toed Ping's like, that's right. And there was already a 12-toed ping on the south side. And I'm like, what is in the water in Republic City? I just really enjoyed that. So that takes us to the end of our second episode. Again, if you would like to get in contact with us to share any of your thoughts or disagreements with us, you can reach us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can talk to us on Twitter in 140 characters or less as @re_watchable. You can comment on this post on Hypeable, which gives you basically as many characters as you'd like. Rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com is our Tumblr account. And you can leave us an iTunes review. If you rate us 5 stars, then Karen will mediate a breakup for you, basically. So let's go to some listener feedback. We have quite a bit from Twitter, which is awesome. Zach, who is at Zach H Official, says that it makes me sad to hear all the core hate on Rewatchable, but I'm not blind. It's warranted. Yeah, I mean, like I've said, I kind of am more pro Cora than I think some other people are on here, but I understand the frustration. Karen, you want to read the next one?
Yes, this next one is from Joe at Total Avenge Joe, who says, Book 2 was a struggle first time around. I wasn't looking forward to a revisit, strangely enjoying it a lot more on rewatch. That's pretty cool. Do you super fans feel the same way?
Honestly, these are the first episodes I've watched in season 2. So, I mean, a little bit. Like, the animation isn't as bad as I remember it being, and I am a little bit less frustrated by the whole thing. But, I mean, you know, also knowing what comes next, it's like, well, this is just not as good as what comes next. So.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I've rewatched all of season 2 in one big block because I find it easier for me to rewatch it all in one go rather than like picking it up in bits and pieces. And I find myself able to keep things straight a lot better. So I've already rewatched all of season 2. And I actually found where I was struggling with it like around the first half, I actually found myself enjoying the second part of season two, like towards the finale. Like I found myself enjoying that stuff a lot better. Which, hilariously, I am just now reading further down in the dark. Can I take this comment? Which is the ULTY Hogwash, who said, I struggled mightily with the first half of book two, but ended up really enjoying the second half. Hang in there. I've only just seen that comment as I was saying it. So, yeah.
It is. Yeah, the second half is definitely more, like, focused, I think. The first half is a lot more set up. The second half is more focused. Ariana, do you want to take Gordon?
Yeah, so Gordon at Toonie Chopper Man, he said, by the way, I don't know if you talked about this, but what do you think of the suggestion that Cora considered killing herself in the season one finale? I've heard people say that that's what the show implied when she stood at the cliff edge in the season one finale just before Aang appears. That's really interesting. I hadn't thought about that at all. That's really dark. I don't know. What do you guys think? Was she thinking about it?
You know, there were a lot of debates about this too. And it kind of went the way of like, either you think that like, absolutely, she was like, I'm going to jump right now. Or like, nope, she wasn't even thinking about it. That's ridiculous. Don't talk about this. I sort of fell in the middle, which was that I did think that like, you know, I felt like it was the type of thing that when you're in a dark place, you're like, wow, my life would be easier if I wasn't alive, you know? And like, she was right there at the edge of the cliff and kind of just like looking at it. And I think that thought did cross her mind. I think that's why we saw the droplet, but I don't think she was like, I am ready to jump. You know, I didn't think it was that intense.
I think I'm going to have to agree with you, Mikal. I obviously, it hadn't crossed my mind at all until he said this. But now that he said it, I think, I mean, if you're that depressed and you're sitting at an edge of a cliff, it has to cross your mind.
Yeah. I mean, also because Cora was in a weird position where, like, you know.
If she died, they would have a new real avatar.
Exactly.
Real avatar.
Yes, exactly, which is why I don't think it's like, oh no, Cora contemplating suicide. I think it was like, you know, like I said, more complicated. Did you have any thoughts on that, Donya? Were you, like, involved in those debates?
I wasn't involved in those debates, but again, I kind of agree with you. I think that if you find yourself in that situation, it is something that would potentially cross your mind, but it's that fleeting thought kind of thing, not necessarily that you are very seriously thinking about doing it.
I really like it when people agree with me. That's, yeah, I enjoy this. So, yeah, and Shelley on Twitter, also Shelley Bookworm, said, wait, now it seems like Hypeable Hype and Rewatchable are starting up a rivalry. I think we know how to decide this. # Hypeable Dub Smash Wars.
I put this in because I'm so confused. I was not aware we have a rivalry. Like,
me neither.
Yeah, do we?
Isn't that like having a rivalry with your boss, which would be a bad idea?
I mean, obviously we're cooler, but
I mean, I don't, well, yeah, but we don't have to prove that. Like,
I don't know where it came from either. I don't know what's going on.
I feel like it's more like having a rivalry with your parents. Like, we're the cool young people.
I am so much older than Andrew, though. I mean, I just do want to say, like, yes, I appreciate the idea that we could be even remotely cool enough to do a Dub Smash War. So I appreciate that.
I mean, honestly, I hadn't even seen this feedback, but earlier today I looked up on there and there are a bunch of Cora quotes that I was considering doing and putting on Instagram because...
Oh my gosh, how funny.
As a Dub Smash?
Yeah.
That would be so great.
All right, Karen, you gotta do that. Though, Karen. That's sort of like the opposite of like those, like this guy who did the Avatar the Abridged series or something where it's, you know, like dubbed over and it's like impossibly foul and hilarious. Yeah. But I mean, I'm not ruling out the idea of a hypeable dub smash war. I just think that we might have to. I think these things need to percolate for a little while. Also, Andrew would never do that. He'd be like, "What the hell are you doing?"
I don't know. Get a few drinks in him, and
this is true. This is true. I mean, yes, but you know. And Karen, you want to take the quote on the comment on our hypeable page?
Yes, this is from Baylor, who says, "Water tribe people need to stop obsessively using the K sound in their names because it's really confusing." And I just want to say that I'm really offended by this comment, and I do not agree.
No, I do agree, because I'm so confused with the bad guys. I cannot keep them straight. They all have the same name to me.
Yeah, basically. I mean, so who is it? It's Unalaq, it's Tonrak,
Tarlok.
Which
one was Tonrak?
Isn't Tonrak Korra's father? Yeah, Tonrak's Korra's father.
Yeah. Okay.
And who else is there? What's his name? What's Amon's real name?
Yeah, and then Amon's dad.
Right.
There's too many.
We're being really culturally insensitive right now, guys.
It's not a real culture. It's made up by Mike and Brian. They could have, as a storytelling technique, they like tell you these things. You have to, you know, make it a little bit easier for the audience to tell people apart. Okay, if you had Korra and Katara as the same age, that would be really confusing.
Yes, it would. I just think this is a really hilarious conversation. But yeah, so I mean, we'll recommend that the next time, you know, we have conversations with Mike and Brian. Oh, did I tell you guys that I almost met Mike and Brian at Comic-Con?
Oh, how exciting.
I know, it was super exciting. I almost met them. I ran to the Nickelodeon booth at like 6 o'clock in the morning on Friday to get a ticket to the stupid signing, and then the signing was on Saturday. I couldn't go, and I ran to the Dark Horse booth, and they had like given out all of their stupid wristbands. They didn't even announce they were giving out. But then I got into the Korra panel with, with a lot of the press people, and the guy met me, and he was like, "Okay, we're just waiting for Mike and Brian, and we're gonna walk the panel." I'm like, "Excuse me, we're walking to the panel with Mike and Brian? Like, what?" And then so yeah, I like followed them to the panel and was just like, Don't be an idiot. Don't, please don't ask a question. Don't like ask for a picture. Just please be cool. And, I couldn't help myself from like saying that, like, I was starstruck. And then Brian was like, "Yeah, well, I'm really tired."
Well, I have to say that Michal gave me her ticket because she was like, "Can you go?" And I was like, "I will definitely try." And it turned out that I did have something else to do. Also, that line was absolutely insane. There was a huge amount of people there. Not that I'm really surprised. So I asked everybody on Hypeable that I could find if they had time to do it. And nobody did. I mean, Saturday was a pretty busy day for us. So I was walking around the show floor looking for Avatar cosplayers. And I found an Aang and a Toph together. And I was like, "Guys, I can't go to this. Nobody I know can go to this. Do you want to go to the signing?" And they were like so shocked. And they were like, "Oh my God, are you serious? No, we can't take this." I was like, "I literally cannot go. Please take this." They were so excited about it. So at least something good came of it. I hope they got a signature and everything.
Yeah. And I'm going to try and like get interviews with Mike and Brian when their new stuff comes out and just like be like, "By the way, yeah," and just be like the best interview they've ever had. That's just, you know, life goals. But we've gone completely off topic. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to Rewatchable. We'll be back next week with a very special episode. You guys know what we're talking about, but Ariana and Karen don't. Ha 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 ha. I am Michal.
I'm Karen.
I'm Ariana.
And I'm Danya.
Thanks for listening, guys. Flameo.
Bye.
Bye. Flameo is not a nice word.
Flameo is an absolutely nice word. Aang says it, and Aang does not say not nice words. Search your heart. You know this to be true.